This is Countdown to Eternity, and a warm welcome to each of you. Each week at this time, Pastors James Cadiz and Don Stewart scan the global headlines, relating the news of today to Bible prophecy. Here now to introduce today's program, Pastor James.
Well, hello, my dear brothers and sisters. We are yet at another historic week as far as what the Bible is telling us will happen in the last days. We are here for Countdown to Eternity. I am with the great Don Stewart. What a blessing that we get to be alive during this time to talk about some incredible things. Thank you for joining us, Don. We got a lot to talk about, don't we, my dear brother?
Yeah, James. It's like every week we keep saying we can't make this stuff up. We have so much to get to in the little half hour we have. Let's get right to it. Right now, as we're recording, we're doing this on Tuesday. There is a march in the city of Jerusalem. They're waving the flag, the Israeli flag. Now, this was the march that was supposed to be on May 10th, the 54th anniversary of the unification of Jerusalem. And that's when the rockets started coming over from Hamas. And so they postponed it. They finally have been going back and forth on that. And it's been quite a mess there today. There have been about 20 fires set by Hamas and, you know, in the sending these incendiary balloons over to Israel. They're waving the flag. And it's just one of these things that with what's happened the last few days, here we are on Tuesday, and just 2 days ago, James, hard to believe that after 12 years, Benjamin Netanyahu is no longer the prime minister of Israel, as we talked about last week. Naftali Bennett, whose party has only 6 seats in the Knesset, only 6, by a majority of 1, they voted Netanyahu out and Bennett in. Bennett, who on television, we mentioned this again during the campaign, swore that he would never join a left-wing government, never at all, and actually signed a piece of paper, an agreement, live on TV saying that. And what happens? He's now the new prime minister, James, of a left-wing government of the 41 seats there, excuse me, the 61, 41 are from left-wing, only 20 the right-wing, when about 65% of the people of Israel voted for a right-wing government. So what a mess they are in right now.
And a real proverbial thread that they're hanging by. I mean, I look at the different parties that are going on, and I'll switch over to this graphic so that you can see this. But, you know, when you look at these parties that are listed, and by the way, you are right. You have said this before, but what they call center is really left-center.
Yes.
As you said before, but it is just amazing to me because when we look at the Arab Muslim party, it's interesting because the leftist group or the leftist part of this organization, this newly organized government, is there are many members in there, not many, but there's a few members that are part of the gay lesbian community. And what's ironic is the Arab Muslim party, who identifies with the same party that these people identify with, actually hate that and don't agree. So this is like a volatile keg that's just ready to explode. I mean, it just looks like it's a powder keg, basically, that's ready to explode. And it's just really interesting. What do you think Bennett means to all of this? I mean, where do you think this is actually going here, especially when it comes to internal security with Israel and so on and so forth? What's your thought on that?
You know, that's a great question, James, because like we said last week, you only have a 1-seat cushion. If one person of the Knesset for one of these 8 parties decides, I don't like it anymore, that can bring down the whole government, new elections. And you're right. You've got people at loggerheads. You've got the Muslim party that, you know, and then you've got the ones on the left that are just totally against it. And of course, you got Bennett and his group and a few others that are very much on the right wing parties we talked about last week. Yamina means right word. That's supposedly where they were going. And so it remains to be seen. Now, it's interesting that I read a thing, the foreign policy is almost being co-opted by this man, Yair Lapid. Now, he got 17 seats in the election, and he's the one that cobbled this together. He's supposed to be the prime minister in 2 years. He and Avigdor Lieberman, who is a non-believing, who is a secular Russian Jew, who is on the right, supposedly, they're sort of running the, seeming going to run the foreign policy for Bennett. So it remains to be seen. I don't know how this can work out. I got a story right here for you. I think I sent it to you today about the environmental minister. She's from the the left-wing Meretz party. The climate crisis is already here. She's the Minister of Environmental Protection from the kooky left-wing Meretz party there in Israel. How in the world are they going to get a government, keep it together, when you got the Labor Party, which is a socialist party, the Meretz party is even left of that. You've got the Muslim party, which even today they have threatened, you know, hey, you can't keep doing this because we'll pull out of the government. So I don't understand. It's the proverbial house of cards, James. So who knows what's going to happen?
Well, and it's getting ready to fall. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And it is interesting to me to see. I mean, I'm more particularly concerned about the foreign policy issue as it relates to security. It's very hard to say what's going to happen. The thing that strikes me about Naftali Bennett is that he actually says, he makes it very clear, well, I'm farther right than Netanyahu really is or ever was. And I just think that's absolutely absurd, because if he was, then he'd be a patriot and he'd really care about our nation or care about Israel. And in caring about Israel, then he would have made the best decision for Israel and not aligned himself the way he did in the formation of the party to allow him to be put into power as prime minister. Because keep in mind, now all of these decisions are going to be yielded to him, right? We're talking about defense, you know, all of these things. I don't know. It's interesting to me. I just look at the condition that Israel is going to be left in as a result of some of these decisions they're making, specifically with respect to foreign policy. Man, it's just hard to tell. I honestly think it's hard to tell. Where are we going to go with this? You know, and that, I guess that's my question. And then here's a question. How do you reconcile all of this with Ezekiel 38? Where Ezekiel 38 tells us that, listen, we're talking about unfenced cities. We're talking about economic prosperity, security, so much so that the surrounding nations that attack them are attacking them because they want what they have. What do you think is going to happen there? Can you provide any analysis of how Bennett's government is going to contribute to that condition? Because that's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, that's the first thought I have. It's like, man, how does Ezekiel 38 formulate? And I kind of have some ideas on this, but I'm kind of curious to know what your thoughts are on it.
Well, you know, James, you hit the nail on the head. This type of government cannot really do anything when you've got people totally opposed idealistically to one another. Sooner or later, something's got to give. And particularly in the area of foreign policy, what's going to happen if Hamas attacks again and the IDF, Israeli Defense Force, responds in a powerful manner? Well, Mansour Abbas and the four people of his Muslim party, they're gonna pull out of the government. We can't have that, you know, because they're gonna have pressure to do that. So what are they gonna do? They can't. What happens also, because this group, the left there, Yair Lapid, Lieberman, and the rest and Benny Gantz have kowtowed to the Joe Biden administration, and they think the Iran deal is something that's not too bad, you know. And their Secretary of State Blinken, as we talked about last week, said Iran is galloping towards a breakout. So sooner or later, something's got to give. I mean, this thing can't last very long at all, because as you said, there has to be security there sooner or later, and they've got anything but that right now.
Well, it is very interesting. Blinken actually conflates agreements like the JCPOA with the type of things that he thinks is going to be necessary to drive a better global environment. He thinks the JCPOA is going to be validated in essence by a global tax that takes place and the uniformity that kind of happens with respect to governments being able to be equipped in financing some of the needs that they have internally. He thinks somehow is going to magically put everything together where the JCPOA becomes a sort of a validated mechanism that keeps Iran at bay, which is obscene. I mean, it's an obscene conclusion. Forget absurd. It's obscene. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, James, here's the thing. I think we need to explain this again to the audience. The country of Iran is ruled by people who believe they are divinely appointed to bring in the 12th Imam, the final Mahdi, the person who will bring the caliphate, Islamic rule over the entire earth. So there's nothing you can threaten them with, economically, militarily, because they have a divine, you know, plan, a divine guidance, and they believe they're the ones chosen by Allah to do this. And so there's really, you know, and they'll lie about it. There's nothing really you can do to stop them except, you know, what President Trump did. You've got the sanctions against them. You've got to make it financially difficult. And yet this administration, just like the Obama administration, thinks, well, we can reason with these people. We can talk them into not doing this. Well, again, first and foremost, at the front of their minds is they're divinely called to do this, to kill if necessary, 18 million people, including their own, to bring this caliphate in into the world. And so if you've got an organization, a leadership that does that, James, what can you do? How can you negotiate with it? You can't, can you?
No, you can't. And the naivety, and I'm going to just be very nice and say naivety, because that's probably the better term to use if I want to be graceful in my assertion here. But the naivety that you have to be able to come to that conclusion is completely astounding, right? I will just say this. I was given an article, literally, I'm not kidding you. I was given an article by a very high-ranking Israeli official who I have a great relationship with that just blew my mind, okay? And this is interesting because the article speaks about the former Mossad chief admitting that he actually got it wrong. And it's interesting because, you know, the Mossad chief happened to think that Hamas was an organization that would be willing somehow to be able to negotiate with Israel, and that they'd be able to come to some kind of a term where they both could stipulate to a particular agreement. And I was telling this Israeli official, I'm like, is he crazy? Is this former chief, I mean, he's supposed to be Mossad. Did he not read the charter of Hamas? Did he not read what they're, and by the way, it's interesting when you think about it, Hamas is not even the Shiites. The Shiites, listen, it's the belief of the Shiites that actually is expressly what you just described, right? The Sunnis have a different way to get there. They have a sort of a different belief. But it's interesting how Hamas is Sunni, and yet they are in bed with the Shiite nation, not to mention the fact that Hezbollah, for whatever reason, is sort of backing off. I think they're doing that at the pressure of Beirut, and I think there's some other implications that are involved with that. Jordan, a few other interesting things. I think Erdogan might have a little bit to do with the play of that. But either way, it doesn't matter. But the bottom line is, it's interesting to me how even Sunnis are falling into place like that. Why? Because their charter specifically stipulates that the only thing that's acceptable for them is the destruction of the Jewish state and the elimination of Jewish people. It says it in their very charter, right? So it's amazing to me how people still continue to choose to walk in ignorance and say, oh, well, we're better than everybody else, and so they'll do a deal with us. No, they won't. And we see evidence of this. They're marching through the streets right now. Hamas is lighting up these balloons that are basically going up in the air and firebombing people. I mean, come on, think about that, how crazy that is. But that is the insanity that literally is the world that we're living in right now. And the insanity isn't the nefarious actions of these invading communities. The insanity is represented by the foolishness of those who are leading, who think that they can actually carry some kind of influential mechanism that drives the foreign policy of a nation that isn't even a nation. They're not even a country. They're a terrorist organization. There is no sovereign land that they stay on. As a matter of fact, they are on borrowed time right now, hanging out in Gaza, assuming that they're going to be able to continue to control the region. Eventually, what's going to end up happening is all that's going to get taken away from them. The question is, how long is it going to be until that happens? I mean, that's the real question.
Yeah, and one thing too, James, we have to understand, so far, Israel and their billion-dollar Iron Dome defense system has stopped 90% of the rockets and the missiles coming in from Gaza. But after each time there's a war, they have more sophisticated ones. There's cruise missiles there that possibly will be sent over from Iran into Israel. And those are extremely, extremely difficult, if not impossible, to defend with, you know, even an Iron Dome system, because instead of like the regular rocket or missile, these things go along the surface of the earth, and it's very difficult to defend against something like that. So remember what Jesus said. He said, unless he intervenes, basically no flesh would be saved. The world would, Matthew 24, would destroy itself, particularly those in the Middle East and Israel and that. And so there's going to come a time, James, when sooner or later, with the weaponry that's thrown at Israel, they're not going to be able to have the defenses, you know, physically to knock them down, will they? So something's got to give sooner or later.
Ah, bro. And look, I mean, the reality of it is whether or not something's even got to give, which you're 100% right, the simple declaration of God's word makes way for this type of thing to happen. And with respect to the whole Bennett government, look, go back and examine the history of the Southern Kingdom of Israel, or the Southern Kingdom of Judah. Sorry, the Northern Kingdom would be called Israel, referred to Israel prior to the breakup of the nation. Before the nation broke up, they referred to as a nation of Israel. And even post the split between the Northern and the Southern Kingdom, you would recognize it as Israel if you said the nation of Israel. But I'm talking about the Southern Kingdom of Judah. if you look at the history of the kings of the southern kingdom of Judah, one particular king made a serious mistake with Babylon. And if you remember, that king chose to be friendly with Babylon. And in their friendliness with Babylon, they invited the leaders of Babylon to come in and to look at all the riches of the temple. And as they went to go see the riches of the temple, by the way, the story behind that is incredible. The foolishness of the person that did that, who said, oh, I don't care because I really don't care about future generations. I mean, in essence, but that's a whole other story. But the similarities here are amazing, because Babylon saw that, and after they saw that, they broke what was seemingly an amicable relationship, and they attacked the southern kingdom of Judah, and in doing so, they took all of those things, and the motivation to attack them was simply the spoils. Now, we're beginning to see the same thing, and I would not be surprised if the Bennett government, or the Bennett administration, for lack of a better term, as prime minister, gets to the point where he is so friendly with some of these key nations like Russia, and actually, dare I say this, like Iran through proxy. I'm not saying directly, but I'm saying through proxy of Russia. I think that the closest relationship that he's going to manage to forge is that with Russia, and Russia will get a glimpse of all of those things, will share that very insight with Turkey, will team up with Iran and these other invading nations and do exactly what they did. And by the way, this is a pattern. God, even through the prophet Ezekiel, warned the nation of Israel to pay attention to the history. Do not, in essence, do not repeat the same direction in which you did prior with your forefathers. Jeremiah kicked in, screamed about it. Many other prophets actually talked about it. And it's so interesting, because when you look at the actions of the southern kingdom, it would seem as though the Bennett government is sort of priming themselves to act as though they did in the southern kingdom when they revealed all of their assets to Babylon. I don't know why I got tongue-tied.
Also, too, we need to remind the people that king was a very good king named Hezekiah, who was given 15 extra years to live after crying out to the Lord. And there were two horrific things he did in those 15 years. Number one, like you said, show the treasures of the temple to Babylon, who after Assyria was taken out in 612 BC, Israel was next in line. But number two, also during that 15 years, James, he sired a child named Manasseh, who was the worst king in the entire southern kingdom of Judah, the evil king who reigned like 55 years. And so I think the moral of the story there is, when God tells you it's time to die, maybe you ought to check out, not ask for another 15 years because of what he did. But you're right. History repeating itself. It's just like in 73, the Yom Kippur War. I don't know if you saw the story. There's a story that came out from the archives that actually the Israelis knew there would be a sneak attack on them on Yom Kippur the next day. They got good intelligence of that. And Golda Meir and her people said, well, if we attack first, you know what's going to happen? The world's not going to like us. They're going to blame us. That kind of mentality was there at that time. Is that ridiculous or what?
Completely. The absurdity of it in and of itself is absolutely insane. I mean, just look at the meritorious value of what Israel has been doing as of late. I mean, think about it. The very fact that they are a sovereign nation that has every right to be able to defend themselves and are being condemned by the international community for actually doing it is good enough reason for Israel to basically tell everybody to bug off. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's good enough reason for Israel to just say, get lost. You have no interest for the existence of the Jewish state. And by the way, it's not like Israel's living in a bad neighborhood. That's sarcasm, by the way. They're living in a horrible neighborhood. They're living in the worst neighborhood that any nation could ever live with. They're surrounded by nations that want to destroy them. They're surrounded by nations that continue to say on a regular basis to one another, we want to see the elimination of the Jewish state. And the worst part about that is as you go and you look at all of the things that they continue to do and where they stand regarding these things, look, let me just show you so you have a good illustration. I'm going to bring this up right now, okay? Look at all the nations that are surrounding Israel right now. Turkey wants to destroy Israel. Iran wants to destroy Israel. So if you can't see it on the map, just so that you understand, look at Egypt, okay? If you look at Egypt, you go all the way north. You see where Cairo is? Okay, you follow over just slightly to the left. You go over where the Sinai Peninsula is. You go over. If you can see, if you go over to the right, you'll see Jerusalem. You see there, that little strip right there. It's kind of like a southern tip there. Amman, Jordan is to the right of there from the map. Syria is above it. Lebanon is above it. Okay, that's where Israel is. Now think about this for a second. Libya hates Israel, okay? Turkey hates Israel. Syria hates Israel. Iran hates Israel. Iraq hates Israel. Whether or not the Jordanians want to admit it, they hate Israel. And it, truth be told, there's a lot more involved in that. I think the real reason why the Jordanians don't like the Israelis so much is because they don't like the idea of the Palestinians moving back into their territory. But we'll just leave that alone, right? You go further south to the Sudan. They can't stand Israel. I mean, and you just look at the list of people, it just goes on and on and on and on. Many of the European nations that are across the Mediterranean, you know, you can look at Italy and all of them, they have made it very clear. They do not like Israel. Okay. And then to make it worse, and I'll just add to this. If you live in Israel right now, there are lots of nations or lots of towns that are surrounding you where they also hate you as well. As a matter of fact, I'll bring up a map to kind of make it easy so that you guys understand this, because it is important for you to be able to see this dynamic. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to set this up right now so you can actually look at this. And by the way, for those of you that are on the radio, if you can't see these maps, go to Calvary Chapel Signal Hill's YouTube page. Just YouTube Calvary Chapel Signal Hill, and then you can see it, what I'm talking about, right? Okay, let me just switch over here. This is a map of Israel right here. You can look at it. By the way, the areas in pink show what was taken in the 67 war, in essence, right? But I'm going to just go over some of these towns that are surrounding really the heart of Israel. I mean, you just look at it inside Israel. If you look, even around the Golan Heights, all the way from Haifa and Tiberias and where Dan is and Nazareth and Netanya and Tel Aviv and Ashkelon, and especially when you start getting into Gaza City and Gaza, and you go to the West Bank where Ramallah is and Ramla, and you go to Beit Lahem and you go to some of these, there's so many people that are within Israel that actually hate Jews, okay? You come on. They not only live in a bad neighborhood, they live so closely to people that want to stab them in the back overnight. I mean, that's the craziness of it. And then to say, and I'm going to switch over to this, and this is very vivid, these represent all the rocket attacks. 4,500 rocket attacks. And yet we think right now that Israel does not have the basis to defend itself. That is insane. Dawn, you're not going to believe this, but we got 2 minutes left. So I'm going to give you the last words. Time has gone by so fast. Let me give that to you.
Okay, thank you, James. One of the things you saw on the map, people, if you were watching, is that the name Israel and the name Jerusalem could even be written in the nation. It was written out in the Mediterranean Sea on the map because it's so small. And one of the countries you didn't see on the map was the biggest of all, the largest landmass in the world, and that's Russia. And that's all right. Of these nations are going to invade Israel. We saw Russia, Turkey, Libya, Iran, and others at the time of the end, because Israel has something they want and something they need. Bible prophecy is literally being fulfilled right in front of our very eyes. In other words, the stage is being set for the last day's conflagration, Ezekiel 37 through 39, particularly 38 and 39. So here's the point for everyone out there. If you're a Christian, realize God has told us what's going to happen in the future. Daniel 12, 9 and 10, we can't understand what's going on. It makes sense to us because it's all coming together. The wicked will never understand. The wise will understand. If you're not a believer in Jesus Christ today, you need to trust him as your Lord and Savior. Once you do that, and once you start seeing the plan of God, then you will understand what's going on. You will understand why you're here. You understand who you are. You're going to understand what's going to happen to you when you die. And that's the great news of the gospel. And that's what we're all about here on Countdown to Eternity. The Bible prophecy we talk about as a means to an end showing you that God does indeed exist, that he knows the future, he's in control of the future, and he's laid it out for us. And that's why we can always end with a smile on our face, because we know how it's all going to end. We know where we're going. But in the meantime, it's a very difficult road to hoe. And we are here to help you out, help you understand. And we're thankful so much for the privilege of doing this on the program. So, James, I just, you know, again, implore the people, if you're a believer, just, you know, hang in there, you know, be salt and light to the world. And if you're an unbeliever, it's time to believe in Jesus.
Amen, bro. And that's the perfect end cap to this time. I want to thank you guys for being with us. Listen, we sincerely hope that you enjoyed listening to this as much as we've enjoyed making it. May God richly bless you. On behalf of the great Dawn Stewart, we want to thank you for joining us as we count down to eternity. God is good all the time, and may he richly bless you.
You're listening to Countdown to Eternity with Pastors James Cadiz and Don Stewart. Hear this program by podcast wherever you like to listen to your favorite podcasts and at CountdownToEternity.com. That's Countdown, the number two, Eternity.com. Don Stewart is an author, and you can access his books for free at EducatingOurWorld.com. Many of them relate to end times Bible prophecy. Pastor James is very active on social media these days. Watch his daily updates on Facebook, Instagram, Rumble, or YouTube. Follow Countdown to Eternity, Educating Our World, and James Cadiz. Then subscribe to our YouTube channel at Calvary Chapel, Signal Hill. Your financial support helps us remain on the air. Thank you for standing with us in these last days. You can make a donation at CountdownToEternity.com. We'd also love to hear from you by email. If you have a question about the end times or prayer request, send it to us. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that at CountdownToEternity.com. That's all the time we have for today, but come back next week as we continue the Countdown to Eternity with James Cadiz and Don Stewart. This program is brought to you by Calvary Chapel, Signal Hill.